Hello, my friends, and welcome back for this week's episode of the Practical Parsha podcast. This is Rabbi Shlomo Kohn, and I hope you are well. Before we begin this week's episode, I'm sorry. I apologize for missing last week's episode. It's been a little crazy, but I wanted to make sure that we get an episode out this week. So I'm sitting here tonight, Monday night. Tomorrow night's going to be Shavuos. Wednesday, Thursday in the diaspora, we're going to be having the holiday of Shavuos. And that only leaves us with Friday to get ready for the weekly Parsha. So I knew I couldn't leave you hanging for 2 weeks. So here I am with some beautiful thoughts on the Parsha for you. And before we begin, as always, if you have any questions, comments, or just would like to reach out just to say hello, really, don't be shy. Send me an email. Try it. You never know what might happen. My email address is Rabbi Shlomo Kohn, KOHN, at gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. This week's Parsha is Parshas Naso. And last week, we began the Book of Numbers. This is the Book of Bamidbar. It's referred to as Numbers in English. And the Book of Numbers, Bamidbar, Sefer Bamidbar, deals with the Jewish people's travels through the desert. And it also recounts, obviously, it has different mitzvos and commandments in this Sefer. But additionally, there's also different mistakes that the Jewish people make in the desert. Some of those mistakes we're still dealing with to this very day. You have the rebellion of Korach against Moshe Rabbeinu. You have the sin of the spies. And you have the different scenarios throughout the Book of Bamidbar where the Jewish people are questioning Moshe Rabbeinu and even in some instances questioning God. And one maybe lesson that we could take out from the theme of Bamidbar is that when it comes to learning and improving ourselves, it's not just about doing new things and you know, incorporating new things into our routine and new practices, but it's also making sure that the mistakes we have made in the past don't get repeated, right? The famous saying goes that those that don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And I think one of the many lessons that we could take out of the Book of Bamidbar as we go through it is this idea of not making the same mistakes that we've made in the past. And it's not just us on a personal level, but also our ancestors as well. So with that, we'll segue into this week's Parsha, Parshas Naso. Parshas Naso deals with the different responsibilities of the different families of the tribe of Levi. And the two sons of Levi, Gershon and Merari, had different responsibilities when it came to transporting and erecting the tabernacle, the Mishkan. Parsha tells us of the total numbers of the families of Gershon and Merari, as well as a commandment that's given from Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu that anyone who's Tamei has to be removed from the camp of the Jewish people till they become pure again. The Parsha also details for us the halachos of the laws if somebody steals from a convert, and the Parsha goes into great detail about the mitzvah of sota, that if a woman is suspected of adultery, the Torah lays out for us a very detailed process of what happens and how she's tested if she's suspected of adultery. Not if she's found guilty of adultery, but she's suspected. We don't know for sure. So the Torah tells us that she's tested. And how is she tested? She's tested with these bitter waters, that the name of God, the infallible name of God, is ripped up and is placed in this water. It's referred to as the bitter waters. And obviously there's a process which happens in order for someone to actually get to that point. But this woman has to drink the water, and a miracle would occur that if the woman was guilty of adultery, she would die. And if she was innocent, she would be saved and she would be fine. The Torah continues with the Nazir, the mitzvah of Nazirus, the Nazirite, that there's instances when a person looking to increase his holiness to become closer to Hashem takes a vow to abstain from certain things which maybe can cause a person to go in the opposite direction of spirituality. So when a person takes a Nazirite vow, they abstain from drinking wine or eating any grape product, as well as cutting their hair and defiling themselves, becoming impure, becoming tameh to a dead person. And through this process of Naziris, which was, you know, there's different lengths that a person could go for, God willing, they would come at the other end a different person, a better person, and an improved person. The Parsha continues with the priestly blessings that the Kohanim are commanded by Hashem to bless the Jewish people. And that this power of blessing is something which is still vested into the Kohanim to this very day. The Parsha finishes with the different dedication offerings of the Nesiim, of the leaders of each tribe, with a summary of the different dedications and offerings that were given in this process. The first idea I want to share with you today takes us to the mitzvah of Nazir, this Nazirus process that we were referring to earlier in this week's Parsha. Now, this Nazir would basically be taking upon these restrictions upon himself to hopefully cause him to become a better person, a holier person, a more spiritual person. And the Torah lays out for us the term and the procedure and the prohibitions that a Nazir has. Now, it's interesting. When a Nazir was finished, there was a specific process that had to be followed, bringing a sacrifice, having his hair being shaved, a special waving of the sacrifice with the Kohen. And it's very interesting. At the end of the Torah's description of the process of a person going out of his Nazir state, the pasuk says as follows: "Vehenif osam haKohen tenufa lifnei Hashem kodesh hu laKohen al chaze atenufa val shoyk atruma va'acher yishteh haNazir yayin. The Kohen shall wave them as a wave service before Hashem. It shall be holy for the Kohen, aside from the breast of the waving and the thigh of the raising up." You know, these were parts of the sacrifice that were waved together with the Kohen. The pasuk continues, "Afterward, the Nazir may drink wine." Now, the question that's asked is, why is it necessary for the Torah to tell us specifically, after this completion of this term, the time, 30 days, that the Nazir took upon himself to not drink wine, why does the Torah have to tell us specifically that now the Nazir could drink wine? Just tell us that his term is completed. What's the significance? What's the lesson that the Torah is trying to convey to us from the fact that it specifically tells us that now the Nazir can drink wine again? There's a story I saw that Rabbi Twersky brings down in his commentary to the Parsha. A chassid once came to his Rebbe and said, "Rebbe, the great Kabbalists tell us that if a person fasts for 40 days consecutively, they'll have these prophetic powers. But I fasted for 40 days and I don't have those special powers. Why is that like that? Why don't I feel any different than I was originally?" The Rebbe told him a story. It's known that the great Baal Shem Tov, the great founder of the Hasidic movement, Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem, had horses that traveled extremely fast, and they covered great distances in a very short amount of time. And it's brought down that the Baal Shem Tov, when he would travel together with his driver, Alexei, would tell his driver to turn around not facing the horses, and they would take off flying in the air. Normally, horses are fed every time they stop at every inn, at every village. They will be fed and watered. And when the horses of the Baal Shem Tov were flying on the road, and they came to the first inn, and they passed it, they started thinking to themselves, maybe we're not horses. Horses eat at every inn, and we just passed the inn. Maybe we're human beings. The horses kept going, and they passed more inns. And this time, when they passed these other inns where people would eat their lunch and eat their dinner, they said to themselves, perhaps if we're passing these inns as well, where people usually eat their supper, maybe we're angels. Finally, when the horses came to an inn and stopped, and they were given hay and given water, they finally realized themselves that we're in fact horses after all. The Rebbe turned to his chassid and said to him, the only way that you could attain these special powers after fasting for 40 days straight is if the fasting has elevated you so much to the point that when you resume eating, you're a different person. You're only eating for the nutrition to be able to serve God. You don't care about the taste. You don't care about the flavor. You don't care about anything else. The 40-day experience is supposed to elevate you to the point that when you resume your regular routine of life, you're a totally different person. But if you're just going through the 40 days to just try to check the boxes off to get those special powers, so then you're no different than the horses of the Baal Shem Tov, who thought that while they're flying, that maybe they're angels, but in fact, they realize soon after, as soon as they came to the next inn, they're just the same horses as before. And the lesson that we see from this week's Parsha about the Nazir, that when the Nazir undertook this process of abstaining from wine and abstaining from cutting his hair and not defiling himself to a dead person, it was in the hope, it was in the idea was to become an elevated and spiritual person, to sort of give a shock to the system. But if he just went through the motions, sort of to check the boxes, so then who says the process has even helped him to become someone else, to become someone better? And that's why the Parsha has to tell us specifically, V'achar yishtes ha-nazir yayin, that the hope is that now when the Nazir is permitted again to drink the wine, he's not drinking the wine the same way as he was doing it before. He has a new outlook to his connection to that wine. He's not the same person that he was 30 days ago. He's more spiritual. He's more holy. And now, even though he's not bound by the restrictions, hopefully he's going to live his life on this higher plane. And I feel like, to make a little bit of a separation, I could relate to this on a certain level. You know, many people try different diets to lose weight, to become more healthier. But diets are very difficult to keep permanently. You know, people sometimes lose weight, and then they gain it back again, and they lose it, and they gain it. It's a struggle. I'm not taking away from that. But I think the idea is, sometimes, is that you're supposed to do some of this diet for a short amount of time, and hopefully that changes you as a person enough, changes your eating habits, that now, even then, though you're not, you know, bound by the restrictions of this diet, you relate to food in a different way than you did before. And I'm, you know, maybe speaking a little bit personally here, and me and my wife, we just did this Whole 30 diet, and now we're past the 30 days. But thank God, at least at this point in time, my relationship with the foods that I couldn't have before is a different relationship. You know, I'm not saying in a few months from now, it might be the same, and I might be the same person as it was before. But at least at this moment, it's a different relationship. You know, it's in moderation. It's more careful. It's, you know, I'm more, you know, I'm much more exacting on it. I'm much more in control of it. The 30 days helped me gain a mastery on the different foods that maybe cause you to be tired, cause you to be, you know, bloated, and so on and so forth. So if we take this idea in the spiritual realm, that when we go through this Naziris process, when the Nazir goes through this Naziris process, he's becoming someone new, he's becoming someone improved. And I think the lesson that we can take out from this is that when we take something upon ourselves, the goal is that hopefully through that experience of taking something on, we're becoming someone a little bit better, we're becoming someone a little bit different. And even through our study, when we learn Torah, after we learn and the different things we do, the mitzvos we do, we're hopefully not going to be the same person that we were before. The person that we are this year is not the person that we were last year. And the person that, God willing, we want to be the next year is not the same person we are now. And I think this is an idea that we should keep in our minds. Just we learn out from this week's Parsha to keep this, when it comes to spiritual growth, to constantly improve ourselves, that we're not the same person that we were yesterday or the day before. The second idea I want to share with you today takes us to the priestly blessings. The Parsha tells us, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Daber el Aaron ve'el Bonov lemar, Ko sevorchu es b'nei Yisrael emor lahem. Speak to Aaron and his son, saying, so shall you bless the children of Israel, saying to them, Yivorecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. May Hashem bless you and safeguard you. Yor Hashem ponav elecha v'yichuneka. May Hashem illuminate his countenance for you and be gracious to you. Yisa Hashem ponav elecha v'yaseim lecha shalom. May Hashem lift his countenance to you and establish peace for you. V'samu eshemiyal b'nei Yisrael v'ani avorachem. Let them place my name upon the children of Israel, and I shall bless them. So the Torah commands, the Torah tells us the commandment that Hashem gave to Aaron and his sons, to the Kohanim, to bless the Jewish people, that they are the agents, they are the messengers to dispense the blessings of Hashem, the blessing of God, to the Jewish nation. Now, the first idea which I want to share with you today takes us to the actual wording of the blessing. And it's very interesting. If you look at this blessing, the blessing is in singular. Yivarecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. May Hashem bless you and safeguard you. Yor Hashem ponav elecha v'chuneka. Right? May Hashem illuminate his countenance for you and be gracious to you. Yisa Hashem ponav elecha v'yasim lecha shalom. May Hashem lift his countenance to you and establish peace for you. Right, you would think for a moment that if this blessing was the blessing that Aaron and his sons, the Kohanim, to this very day would be blessing the Jewish people, why is it singular? It should be plural, right? The blessing is to the whole Jewish nation. Why is it singular and not plural? That's one question. Another interesting point which I want to bring out, and maybe it ties in, is that we know that when the Kohanim make the blessing before they give this bracha of the Birchas Kohanim, of the priestly blessings, they make a special bracha. And the bracha is as follows. Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu melech haolam, asher kiddushanu b'kedushaso shel Aaron, v'tzivanu levareches amo Yisrael be'ahava. That Hashem has sanctified us with the Kedusha, the sanctity of Aaron HaKohen, and commanded us to bless the Jewish people with love. And it's interesting, this is the only blessing in the entire Torah where the commandment is to bless with love. You don't see this anywhere else when it talks about our blessings that we make over the Torah, we don't talk about to do it with love. Only here, when it's the Kohanim, the priestly blessings, where the Kohanim are commanded to bless the Jewish people, is it with love. It's interesting. So let's go back to our first question. Why is it that the priestly blessings are singular? And the answer to this is that the first prerequisite to receive blessing, to make ourselves utensils to acquire the blessings, is to have peace. This idea ties very well into these verses. Because number one, when you have unity, when there's unity, when the Jewish nation are united, when we're together, that's why the blessings, the Kohanim that the Kohanim give, are in the singular. Because in order for the blessing to take effect, to be received, it has to be with a sense of togetherness. And the key for us to receive blessing is shalom. The Talmud tells us, "Ein kli machzik bracha el hashalom," that there is no utensil that contains blessing like peace. And the example that's given for us to understand this is that if I would want to give you the best wine in the world, or the best whiskey in the world, and I give you a barrel, and I'm pouring this barrel but it has a crack, it has an opening at the bottom. I could pour you unlimited amounts of wine into the barrel, but it won't stay. You'll have nothing at the end of the day because there's a crack in the barrel. But if it's a whole barrel, it's complete, it's sealed properly, so then I'm able to give you this valuable wine for you to take home to enjoy. That's the understanding over here. Ein kli machzik bracha el hashalom. That there is no vessel for blessing, only peace. And this ties very well into this concept of the Birchas Kohanim, this blessing of the Birchas Kohanim. It's in singular. We finish off with the blessing of shalom, which also can be read shalem as complete, that we're one, we're united. And to really take this one step further, the blessing which the Kohanim make, like we said earlier, has to be made with love. There has to be unity. There has to be feeling of brotherliness. And it's actually interesting. The Zohar tells us, and this is actually cited in Halacha, in Jewish law, that if a Kohen hates somebody in the congregation, he is not allowed to go to do Birchas Kohanim. He cannot bench the people. He cannot bless the people. And the idea is that even though we have differences, we still need to get along, to love each other, to care about each other. And this is something I think that us Jews can learn from the non-Jews. Because the way they look at us is as one. Doesn't make a difference if you're totally secular or you're very religious. You're Jewish. You're one. You're the same. And the way that they look at us is the way that we need to look at ourselves. And I think that's a very powerful message from this week's parsha. We see from the Berachos Kohanim that if we want the blessing to reside in ourselves, to make ourselves a receptacle for blessing, we have to try to get along. We have to try to have unity, to have that peace between ourselves. And God willing, when we have that peace, when we have that togetherness and unity, we'll be able to receive all the blessings. So with that, I'm going to finish for today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed. If you have any questions, comments, or would like to reach out, please feel free to send me an email at Rabbi Shlomo Kohn, KOHN, @gmail.com. Have a great day.